Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about The Rest is Noise by Alex Ross. Sophie, have you ever thought about how the music of the 20th century actually sounds like the history of the 20th century?
Morning, Sam. I have now because this book makes that case so powerfully. It's a sweeping history that puts you right inside the concert halls and the political turmoil, showing how composers were part of the big dramas of their time.
Right, and it opens in this fading world of late romanticism. You've got Richard Strauss, whose opera Salome was this scandal with its shocking eroticism. It basically announced that a new century had arrived.
Exactly.
That work pushed tonality to its breaking point. And then Arnold Schoenberg came along and just shattered the old rules with atonality. It wasn't random, though. He felt the old language couldn't express modern anxiety.
That's what got me. Schoenberg wasn't trying to be difficult for the sake of it. He was responding to a deep sense that the old harmony was exhausted. His music was this anguished, expressionist cry.
And meanwhile, in Paris, you had a totally different kind of modernism. Debussy was dissolving harmony with shimmer and atmosphere, not with violence. Then Stravinsky came along and dropped the rite of spring on the world.
Oh, that premiere in 1913. The pounding rhythms and brutal folk melodies caused an actual riot. Ross calls it a cultural earthquake. It was like the raw energy of the new century shattering the old world's decorum.
And then World War I happened. That changed everything. The composers who came of age in the 20s had seen the trenches. Their response was this new coolness, a rejection of overheated emotion. That's where neoclassicism came from.
Stravinsky turned to a more detached, ironic style, borrowing from the Baroque. In Germany, you had Paul Hindemith and Kurt Weill, who were writing music that was functional, satirical, and deeply engaged with the social realities of the Weimar Republic.
While stuff with Brecht, like the Threepenny Opera, was both popular and profoundly critical of society. And all that vibrant, chaotic culture was a reflection of a society in crisis, trying to reinvent itself after the war.
Then the Nazis crushed it. This is one of the most disturbing parts of the book. The Nazis understood music's power. They saw themselves as heirs to Bach and Beethoven, and they wanted to purge everything they deemed degenerate.
They banned Schoenberg and Weill, and targeted Jewish composers. Ross tells the heartbreaking story of Victor Ullmann, who kept composing in the Theresienstadt camp before being sent to Auschwitz. The Nazis weren't Philistines. They were music lovers with a twisted, politicized idea of what music should be.
That's such a chilling thought. Meanwhile, across the Atlantic, America was this musical melting pot. You had Charles Ives, an insurance executive who wrote these wild collages of hymns and marching bands layered on top of each other.
And then Aaron Copland, who really defined American music. He started as a modernist, but made a conscious choice to simplify in the 1930s. That gave us Appalachian Spring and Rodeo, music that felt like the American landscape itself.
It wasn't dumbing down. It was a profound artistic choice to speak to a nation in the middle of the Depression and a world war. But after the war, things went the other way. In Europe, composers like Boulez and Stockhausen pushed total serialism to the extreme.
Everything was controlled, mathematically determined. The result was often fiercely intellectual and alienating. Then in America, John Cage took a radically different path. He embraced chance and silence.
I have to ask about 4 feet 33 inches. The piece where the pianist sits and does nothing for 4.5 minutes. It's not a joke, right? It's a philosophical statement that the sounds around us are just as valid as the notes.
Exactly.
Cage opened the door to thinking about music as listening rather than control. And then minimalism came in as a reaction against all that complexity. Composers like Steve Reich and Philip Glass started using simple, repetitive patterns that shifted slowly.
That music is hypnotic. Reich's music for 18 musicians is a landmark. It proved that contemporary classical could be both intellectually rigorous and emotionally powerful. It was a return to tonality, but transformed by modernism.
And throughout all this, Ross doesn't shy away from the question of the audience. The relationship between composers and the public grew strained. He tells the story of Elliot Carter, whose dense music struggled for decades, and Shostakovich, who navigated Stalinist censorship.
Shostakovich's symphonies are filled with this bitter irony, a hidden language of dissent. It's amazing how art can speak truth to power, even under oppression. And Ross brings the story up to the late 20th century with Ligeti, Berio, and even John Adams's Nixon in China.
What emerges is music as a living art form, constantly responding to the world. Ross makes these composers feel like real, flawed, brilliant people. And he describes the music so vividly that you want to hear it right away.
For me, the takeaway is that the noise of the 20th century wasn't random chaos. It was purposeful. It was the sound of a world trying to make sense of itself, to create beauty out of catastrophe. It makes you want to listen with fresh ears.
And if you're curious to explore more of these composers and their works, the whole library is over at 7minutebooks.com/app. There are over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language for just $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access. The rest is noise teaches us that even in the most dissonant sounds, there's meaning and resilience. We'll see you in the next one.